WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
July 4th is a big holiday for carnivores with barbecues. I know what you're thinking, that we're about to present an interview about the pleasures of grilling tofu. Nope, we have an interview with a meat connoisseur, Bruce Adels, co-author of The Complete Meat Cookbook. He also owns a gourmet sausage company and is a former restaurant chef. If the meat you remember from childhood is more tender than the meat you're buying today, it's not your imagination. Adels says there's a reason for it.
The farmers and producers have responded for the public's desire to eat less fat, and so they sort of put their cattle and pigs on a diet, and they've been successful. It started about 20 years ago, and so the result is that pork is about 50% leaner than it used to be, and cattle, depending on the grade, is also much leaner. In fact, in 1986, they redid the whole grading system and created a new grade called USDA Select, which is a much leaner grade than what we were all used to buying, which was Choice, which is still available, but a lot of supermarkets now carry Select. It just has a lot less fat. And the good news is that, yes, it's healthier. The bad news is fat provides flavor. And it also juiciness and sort of texture, tenderness. So the issue is how to make the meat that we have today taste almost as good as it used to taste.
We have a lot of suggestions for that in your new book. Why don't you give us a couple of how to put the juices back in?
Well, one of the things is you really do have to pay careful attention to how well the meat is cooked. And this is particularly true with pork, which tends to be the most well done of all meats. And the old recipes that tell you to cook it to 180 degrees, you need to throw those out. And you need to really cook pork. It's still going to be well done, but it's going to be in the range of 150 to 160 degrees. And that's the internal temperature. And it's the internal temperature of any piece of meat that determines, you know, how done it is or not. So that's really important. The other thing is to cook things gently. If there are things like stews and braises, instead of boiling them, you know, really vigorously, and to make sure that you select the right cut of meat for the right dish. And that's probably one of the most basic pieces of information. It's kind of obvious, but it isn't that obvious actually.
Let's get back to the pork for a second. You suggest cooking it at a slightly lower temperature than what the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, recommends. What about trichinosis? Are you risking trichinosis?
Well, no. I would never want to tell somebody that something that could cause a risk of some kind of foodborne disease. Trichinosis is killed at 137 degrees internal temperature. Which is actually sort of in the medium rare level. So I'm not saying to cook it down that low, but if you cook 10 or so degrees above that, or even 15 degrees above it, you're going to eliminate that risk. And the truth is that we don't have a whole lot of trichinosis in our meat supply, even though as a producer, I do own a sausage company, we have to treat every piece of pork as though it does have trichinosis. But the reality is that it's extremely rare.
Now, how does the bacterial, you know, and E. coli scare affect your techniques of cooking?
Well, it's certainly it means you got to think about how well you're going to cook meat. And the thing that's most important, where you have the highest risk, is ground meat. And ground meat, once you take a piece of meat that is basically sterile except for the outer surface and then expose it to the environment by chopping it up, and whatever it comes in contact with, it's going to pick up whatever possible bacteria are there. Now your risk is increased. So when it comes to ground meat, the safest thing to do is to cook that meat to an internal temperature of 160, which means well done. It still will be at 160, it still has a little bit of juice, especially if you buy like ground chuck, which has a little bit more fat in it. I think that it's not much of a risk for solid chunks of meat like steaks, because steaks are really seared on the outside, which is a high enough temperature to kill just about any kind of organism that might be living on the surface. And like I say, the interior of the meat is basically sterile.
You suggest that the indispensable tool for the chef who cooks meat is the digital thermometer. Tell us why this is so important.
Well, it's the whole name is digital instant rate thermometer.
Oh, excuse me.
Because what most of us remember are these things called meat thermometers, and they were these big old clunky metal things. You stuck it into the meat, and you left it in there, and then you checked it, and it would tell you, you know, well, rare, medium. Unfortunately, number one, they were very inaccurate. And number two, they still have a lot of the old guidelines. Like, they still tell you to cook pork to 170 degrees. So forget about those. A digital thermometer is designed to take an instant reading. So you actually take the piece of meat out of the oven or whatever, open the oven door, stick that in, wait 10 seconds, and you get the reading of the interior of that piece of meat. And it's fairly accurate. It's very accurate. The reason I like digital as opposed to the dial type is because a digital actually only needs to have the tip inserted into the meat to give you a reading, while the dial type you need to actually insert a couple of inches. So they're very, very useful for steaks where you only have maybe a 1-inch thick steak, so you only have to push it in like to the middle, halfway in, half an inch, and you'll still get a nice reading so you can tell when steaks are done. I'll tell you the truth, yeah. Terry, though, none of us guys that actually cook a lot of meat ever use a thermometer. We use the old finger method.
What is that method?
Well, you poke the meat, and you can tell by how firm it is, how done it is. It does kind of fall apart when you have a big old prime rib, though. And even the pros like myself do use a thermometer to tell a prime rib, because you can't tell at all by looking at it or pushing it, and because it's just too thick of a piece of meat.
But for the rest of us, you recommend that digital instant thermometer.
Yeah, it pays for itself the first time. You don't ruin the Christmas roast, right?
Exactly. Now, pork is really making a comeback, and it's being hyped as the other white meat. You call it in your book the most versatile meat. What's so versatile about it?
Because it has this wonderful propensity to go well with so many different flavorings. I'll give you an example. Pork tastes good with sweet things, with apples, with prunes. But it also tastes really good with pungent things, soy sauce, garlic, ginger. It's just very versatile. It also has a very, very nice texture in our mouth, a good flavor. Of course, you can roast it, you can stew it, you can pan fry it. The only thing about pork, because it's so much leaner, is you just have to be careful with the most popular cuts, which are actually the loin cuts, because, like I say, you don't want to overcook them. You don't want to cook those to 170 degrees, like the old recipes say.
Did you grow up in the 1950s or 60s?
Yeah, 1950s. My mother was a 1950s onion soup cook. Everything had powdered onion soup in it.
What were the meats of choice that you were served by your mother?
Lamb chops cut very thin and crisp. Hamburgers made with onion soup cooked till all juices were removed. Chicken cooked till it was falling out, so you'd lift up the drumstick and the chicken would kind of fall onto your plate. Let's see. She did have a bunch of casseroles, one which I really hated, called Shipwreck.
What was that?
Well, she said she learned it. During the war, I guess she worked in a shipyard, and one of her co-mates, workers, it was noodles, green bell pepper, which I hated as a kid, canned corn, hamburger, and spaghetti sauce. All mixed together and baked until the noodles got really soft and mushy.
Wow.
If my mother listens to this, she's going to kill me.
Or she'll make it for you.
No.
Well, you say in your book that her favorite spice, or in fact her only spice, was garlic salt.
Yes, actually, the truth was it was Lowry's seasoned salt, which was a more glorified version of garlic salt. It was on everything, and her way of doing a piece of chicken was cover it very generously with Lowry's and then roast it or bake it in the oven. That was the fresh garlic was a rare event in my house. I think the clove that was there when I went to high school is probably still there.
Is there anything that you ate as a kid that you still like a lot now?
Oh, yeah, sure. My mother made a great brisket, you know, pot roast out of brisket, delicious. Her short rib recipe was also very good. It's the old-fashioned one with, like, chili sauce, bottled chili sauce, but it's still good. And I got to admit, I did like the onion soup on the pot roast. You know, where you basically throw in a package of onion soup and a pot roast and some stock or water. It's still pretty good. I did actually slip that recipe into my book.
Now you have doctoral degrees, I believe, in endocrinology and physiology.
Endocrinology is actually a branch of physiology. Yes, I do. It has nothing to do with anything I've said today. Don't hold it against me.
And you were, am I right that you were studying to be a cancer researcher?
Yeah. No, I actually did it for 5 years, worked down the road from Philadelphia in Bethesda, Maryland, for a year or two. I actually studied breast cancer. But the truth was I found that I knew my career was not in science when I spent most of my afternoons planning the evening menu. And when I'd go to the library and fall asleep on the journal papers, I knew that I wasn't really motivated.
So what was the turning point where you said, I'm getting out of cancer research and into cooking?
Well, the government took care of that. The government in the late 60s and 70s really withdrew a lot of funding for basic research. And so this was in the end of the 70s, actually. The lab I was working in was basically closed down, so I kind of had to look for a job somewhere. And the economic reality was that I was a better cook, and somebody offered me a job.
Well, since you know a lot, obviously, about medical research, I'm wondering if you have any concerns about eating a lot of meat leading to either cancer or heart problems.
Right.
How's your cholesterol?
Moderately high, not too high. It's sort of, you know, right there. Well, first of all, I'm not telling anybody they should eat a lot of meat. I just think that they shouldn't eliminate meat from their diet if they enjoy it. But, you know, I'm not also saying to anyone that thinks that they shouldn't eat meat to go ahead and eat it. I mean, or am I trying to ever talk a vegetarian into, you know, going back and eating a rare steak? But I think that if you're going to have meat, you shouldn't enjoy it. And that's basically my message. Just get the most enjoyment you can out of whatever you're gonna cook.
Bruce Adels is co-author of The Complete Meat Cookbook. Our interview was recorded last year. Coming up, a review of the new movie, The Perfect Storm. This is Fresh Air.